Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Voice Rising. Today is all about exploring transformational voice work, sound healing, and the song of creation. What role does voice play in shifting old paradigms and changing the narratives to heal our earth? And I am delighted to have with me in studio Susan Elizabeth Hale. Susan is a pioneer in the fields of music therapy and vocal toning. She has taught thousands of people around the world to find and free their natural voice. Susan is a creator of Earth Day, Sing for the Trees, and the author of the juvenile fiction novel Emma Oliver and the Song of Creation, and also the book Sacred Place, Sacred Sound, The Acoustic Mysteries of Holy Places. American born, she now lives in Malvern Hills in England. And Susan, I warmly, warmly welcome you to Voice Rising today. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you so much, Kara. Yes, may all our voices rise.
Exactly. May all our voices rise. So I'd like to begin with a question that's going to take us back to your childhood. I hope it's going to start this conversation in a very relaxed place. Do you have a powerful vocal memory from your childhood, from growing up?
Well, I have two memories. The first is something that was told to me. My mother said that I sang before I talked, that she was singing Rockabye Baby in the room, left for just a second, came back, and I was humming it. I was humming the melody. So song has always been with me since the earliest of time. And the other powerful memory was I was 3 years old at the Presbyterian Church in Mesa, Arizona, and the teenagers egged me to go on to the stage. Now, this wasn't really before anybody but them. And sing. And so I started singing up somewhere over the rainbow in a very high-pitched Jeanette McDonald falsetto.
Right.
So this is 1953. For those of you who might not know Jeanette McDonald, when I'm calling you. Yes. And I loved it. I loved it. They were laughing.
You already knew Somewhere Over the Rainbow at that age.
My mother, that was my lullaby my mother sang to me.
Oh, beautiful. Because the film can, it's a beautiful film.
Yeah, that's my strongest memory linked with my mother is that song.
Oh, yeah. It is a lullaby, right?
It is a lullaby. Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is a lullaby. And I sing that at her memorial service.
Oh, bless. Yeah.
And made people cry, but I was able to take the song in me and allow it to rise up without crying myself.
Yeah, that's a very powerful magic. I also sang at my father's funeral. And I think it's a great gift. It's not always easy to keep the throat open when we're experience grief, but if we connect to that bigger vision, right, that we want to sing for our, you know, our loved ones who are have passed or transitioning, then
yes.
There's nothing, I think, that moves us more as an audience, but also within ourselves as a community, than to sing at these important life moments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I said it made people cry, and that's part of the purpose, I think, at a memorial service. I think in the Western culture, we still even tend to apologize about our grief and crying at times when, hey, this is the time to do it, folks.
Exactly.
You're allowed, you know. And there used to be a tradition, I think, not sure which Native American culture, I think it was the Paiute, would take strips of the deceased clothing and hold a cry dance.
Hmm.
So it was a communal thing that was done to cry, to allow that ocean of grief to come forth,
and
so that
I
the departed person can travel onto the other side.
Right. I have also heard that in Ireland, I believe, that there was also...
Yes.
There were women that were assigned to usher in the, you know, the grief through certain keening, I believe it was called, you know, wailing songs where they could tap into that very deep sound and help people to grieve by singing in a way also with very, you know, low groans and high wails that would facilitate, right? So it was not a controlled song, but more a song that would guide people into releasing, right?
Yes, and I think we really need that right now with everything happening in the world,
mm-hmm.
with the rise of extinction and global warming and 5G mm-hmm. technology. All sorts of things are happening in our world that we need to add our voices to.
Right.
And we need to find ways to grieve and wail through our voices in safe places.
Exactly.
In safe places.
Yeah, you're very passionate about voice and sound consciousness. You've helped thousands of people find their true natural voice. And you've also written a wonderful adventure novel, Emma Oliver and the Song of Creation. I had the great, it was a gift, actually. I was, you know, able to read the book a few weeks back and really enjoyed it, about a young girl finding the power of her true voice and helping other people free their voices. I think that was one of the most touching things in the book. It's not only about her finding her voice, but also through her finding her voice. You know, it's just everybody it is like that when we find our true voice, we free so many people in our family or community to also...
Absolutely. We can heal the generations, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had
right.
stories of people who have said that when I took your class and found my voice, I was able to talk with my mother and daughter
Beautiful.
About the wound that was there in that family around singing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed Emma Oliver. It was my mission to write her.
Yeah, I mean, Emma was 11, right? So she's
pre-teen
in that moment. And she is bridging the mother and daughter. You have the mother, the grandmother, and the daughter. And she doesn't... I can't remember. Does she believe she can sing? I think she doesn't believe she can sing.
She doesn't believe she can sing. Her grandmother's voice was stolen,
mm-hmm.
and her mother made a choice to not take up the call to be a tree singer and didn't want Emma to have anything to do with it. So Emma thought she couldn't sing, and now she's being asked to sing to the dying great mother tree.
Right.
She has to sing the song of creation, and it's a very big deal. And that's what her journey is about, to find her voice and to do this generational walk.
So what are the ways that songs can be passed on through many generations?
Well, one very simple thing, I think, is lullabies.
Mm-hmm.
That if we were lucky enough to have our mothers sing to us, or our grandmothers or other relatives sing to us,
right.
then that song like for me, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, soaks into your bones and your heart.
Right.
And it's something that you treasure. You treasure that memory, and you want to learn that song, and you want to pass that song on to other people.
And it has to do also with breath and tone, I think, because it is a little bit frightening. I mean, I'm a singer and a mother. I find it a little bit frightening that some kids now are going to bed with a YouTube channel of lullabies.
Oh.
I think I understand, I guess if you are not there, it's better to put the lullaby CD on than nothing. But I do think that there's a very big piece of it missing, which is, you know, sitting there and being present and breathing together and singing together and listening.
Absolutely. And singing with the voice you have. I'm a big advocate of sometimes people hear the word singer and they think that means you've got to be like Lady Gaga or whoever is the pop star of the moment. No, you sing with the voice you have. And when I have asked women, were you sung to as a child? And they say, yes, my mother or grandmother sang to me. And what was their voice like? Oh, it wasn't a great voice, but it was a voice full of love. And I remember the love.
I remember I did read somewhere a beautiful study where they were studying the immune system and, you know, this effect that voice has. And it was one of those things that they basically took the classically trained soprano who had the perfected voice and then the mother's voice full of love, and that they found that the mother's voice full of love was actually strengthening the immune system, because it has to do with the intent in which we sing, right? So what is our intent? Is it, I'm not saying that the classically trained soprano also cannot have the intention of pure love while she's singing, but it's fascinating how the intent creates the energy behind our words and melodies.
Yes, I believe that too. Yeah, that's a beautiful illustration of what we're talking about.
And then somehow, don't you think that there is a lot of music missing also for other important or even rituals, the first day of school, and then somehow singing simply kind of peters away after kids are 6 or 7, that at least I'm based in Germany, it seems like people do a lot of singing when the kids are young, but suddenly they come into school, and unless you're in that choir program, the singing stops at home.
Yes, I think that's really true. And I think that one reason that happens is that we think of singing as happening at certain places. It's allowed in a church. It's allowed in a choir. It's allowed in a school. Mm-hmm. But outside of those socially sanctioned places, unless you're performing another place allowed, then the rest of the world is a no-singing zone. And singing as part of our indigenous soul, whether or not we grew up in any kind of indigenous-initiated society, we still have that connection with the earth.
Right, right. And,
people used to sing all the time.
Yeah.
They sang. Yeah, they sang. We were singers.
Yeah, while hanging the laundry, while walking down the street, while hooking up the horses, while...
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And if we
and
sing now, if we walk down the street and are singing at the top of our lungs, people actually want to put us away in a... in a crazy house.
Yeah, it's kind of been equated with I'm crazy if I sing out loud anywhere, train station. And actually, when I started really teaching that message, I thought, well, I better practice what I preach. So I have sung to a car mechanic. I have sung twice, two different car mechanics. I sang to a butcher who gave me an extra chicken thigh for some reason. I've sung to people at airports.
Nice.
And initially, sometimes there's a little like, huh, what? What are you doing? Or what are you asking me to do? But pretty soon something shifts and it becomes this really wonderful moment of connectedness.
Right. That's very precious. I know that they do have pianos in some airports now.
Oh, yes.
Which is lovely, but I think that let's be inspired. Let Susan Elizabeth Hale lead the way. I would love to be in airport lounges and have us all starting to, you know, pass the time by singing and doing some rounds and doing all that. Susan, we're going to take a small station break.
Okay.
Let's stay on those thoughts. You guys out there, think of great songs that you'd love to sing, and we're going to be back in a couple minutes.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com, M-E-T-T-A, mindfulnessmusic.com.
Why was the basketball court all wet?
Because the players kept dribbling on it.
The dad joke. Corny, groan-worthy, but also one of the simplest ways to share a moment with your kids.
What did the buffalo say when he dropped his son off for school?
Bye, son.
So take a moment to make your kid laugh, because dad jokes rule. Make your kid laugh today. Go to fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
So, welcome back. I'm Kara Johnstad, and I'm in studio with Susan Elizabeth Hale, voice liberator, music therapist, and author. And Susan, we were talking about the role that voice plays in our lives, and I was wondering, what happens to our world, or what is, you know, the role that voice has to play when we've forgotten so many of our songs and we're telling each other, I always call it like the singing epidemic in a way. It's like, or the non-singers epidemic. I'm not sure how you would say that, but there's mm-hmm. so many people that are saying, I can't sing, I can't sing. We've given the power to our MP3 players and maybe to the Lady Gagas and the superstars, but we're missing the point that we are all singers, like you said. So what's happening? What's the result of, forgetting parents,
well,
grandparents?
There's a lot to say about that. I mean, in a way, what you just asked, what is the result of that, where we're sort of living in a techno-crazed culture and we're numbing out. Mm-hmm. We're becoming entranced by technology rather than remembering part of our job as a human is to enchant.
Right.
To enchant life, to enchant the world. Mm-hmm. And I think we got there over a lot of different kinds of situations. I think one was, you know, we had pianos in the home, but then we started getting radios and record players in the home. And we started preferring and comparing those other voices to our homegrown voice that maybe, you know, was a great voice, an adequate voice, a voice that was giving itself and others joy, but that started saying, oh, I don't sound like that. And then I think also, Cara, there's a whole message that is not so subtle, really. I went online once and found all kinds of cartoons and radio programs and TV shows that were making fun of people singing.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So it's an emotional thing. Somebody tells us your voice isn't good enough because the voice is the carrier of emotion. And I don't think our cultures right now, because it's not just, you know, America or Germany or England where I live. It's kind of a global phenomenon that you're not supposed to be emotional. And you give your emotions away to movies or to video games.
That's true. I think that we are fed by, always have been, by great stories and songs and music. But of course, if we're being controlled by what we ingest and not creating it ourselves, not making up our own songs, not making up our own stories, then it has to do with a very big industry that is feeding those stories of what's right and wrong, right? That people
exactly. There was one, again, this is maybe dating me, but Blondie and Dagwood, an American cartoon. Dagwood's in the bathtub singing at the top of his lungs, and a burly stranger comes in and says, if you don't stop singing, I'm going to shove this bar of soap down your throat.
Oh, my gosh.
There's really very abusive things being said in cartoons and TV shows like that. Wow. It was shocking. It was shocking when I started compiling them. It was really, really shocking. So that gives us the message, oh, well, I'm not supposed to do that. I'm not supposed to do that.
And don't you think I was going to say, don't you think also as a music therapist, I do a lot of coaching also of, you know, singers and healing voices, that the voice is not only there to express our emotions, but also there to protect us and help us if there are aggressive messages coming from outside, our throat closes to protect that heart, also to protect our body system. So a lot of people, they might not think they can sing because actually it's not that they don't have a voice, but it's because the throat has closed in an abusive situation, or if somebody says you can't sing, you can't sing, the throat closes down to keep that heart also protected.
Exactly, right. To keep us safe. That is exactly what I believe, too, and what I have seen. And then,
and so,
through a closed throat, you can't allow, you can speak, but you can't allow that natural rise and fall of feeling and heart song and just our words to speak from the heart.
Right, and then often people people think they become very frustrated because they have an instrument. It's similar to trying to write a story with a pen that is not in flow. And so instead of saying, hey, how do I get my instrument to get back in flow? Because I do remember there was a time when I was small and I had a really big open channel and had a lot of joy and bliss. I know it's there. They simply say, I can't sing.
Yeah. Right? And then it gets reinforced because when they do, they're singing through a closed throat, and the closed throat will make things sound out of tune. And then, then the story, I'm tone deaf.
Right. Which, as far as I know, I don't know what your experience is, but I think it's only 0.00001% of people are truly tone deaf. I think the chances that you are tone deaf are very rare.
That is exactly my experience, Cara. We're singing from the same songbook.
That's good.
It's a great reflection and a great reminder. And sometimes a lot of my work with people is been about them sharing the story of their voice. Mm-hmm. What is the story of your voice? Listening compassionately, giving them simple exercises to do to open the throat, and giving them encouragement and reflection.
Right.
And voice mirroring sometimes. I'll have people make tones and I'll mirror their sounds. So they're not trying to fit into my sounds or fit into a song, but just, you know, breathing in through the nose, out through the mouth, feeling that three times, and then allowing a sigh to come out, allowing some tones to ride on that sigh. And then I mirror that in the private work that I've done. And people go all sorts of wonderful places with that. And they find that they can make sound, and then if they want to take that into singing a song, then they're much freer with doing that because there's not that old story on their shoulder. My brother told me not to sing. My father told me to shut up. You know, all of those very real things that do happen to people. You know, we need to make it safe for people to explore, because it's very tender. There's very tender hearts in there that really want to open up but are afraid.
Yeah. Well, very tender hearts, and also this is voice work, so the one thing is to connect with our own voice, our true voice. The second thing is to reflect on how other people's voices are affecting, you know, how we're giving away our power to the choir director or the father or the brother, and that their voice is actually stronger. I've had people break down and cry. They're 60 years old, and they tell me when they were five, their father said, I can't, you know, they couldn't sing.
Yeah.
Their father's already passed. He's no longer on earth.
Yeah, exactly.
And yet they still hold that voice of the father to be truth, right? So it's a very...
I think because the voice carries so much in it. Each of our true voices carries all of our longings, all of our dreams, all of our feelings, our truth. And if somebody says, you can't sing, then it's like they're saying you're bad and you're wrong.
Right. We each have our own voice print. And it's almost like telling somebody they have the wrong fingerprint. It's a,
exactly,
it's a
or the wrong hair color or eye color.
Yeah.
What
struggles or health issues can creep up or can appear when the vocal channel is blocked?
I haven't been as much of an expert in that, but, you know, certainly I think people in holding back their voice and their power and their feelings, then it creates stress in the body and, you know, probably can lead to really drastic things.
Yeah, the newest studies seem to say that the expression of emotions is so important to keep our energy in flow, put it like that. So if the newest studies also with cancer patients, it's a lot of reconnecting with those repressed or suppressed emotions. And that's That is the beauty of singing, is that we can choose songs, whether it's the blues or it's, you know, to express really deep sadness or grief or also ecstasy or bliss. I mean, there are a lot of great songs, you know, there are a lot of great salsas or sambas or, you know, quick polkas where we can also go into joy. It doesn't have to be only
absolutely.
The
it doesn't
sadness,
just have
right?
to be you open up your voice and suddenly all this grief or anger comes out. Yes,
exactly.
That can come out. But yeah, as you say, it could be the joy that's repressed, the bliss that's repressed. And so, you know, when it's freed up, I mean, yeah, sometimes people will enter a workshop looking like, oh, you know, what am I doing? And leave with these open faces.
Right.
I'm sure you've had that experience too. The face opens up, light comes into the eyes, the spring comes into the step, and it's really so simple, but as you say, people, you know, believe these stories. So that's the first thing.
Yeah, it is so simple. That's why I'm always inspired to, you know, meet other voice coaches and singers and writers, because it is really that simple. We can have heaven on earth. We can be singing and buying groceries and dancing and telling great stories, and it is that simple. And it's kind of like this powerful tool that we have forgotten. That's why I was very inspired by Emma Oliver, because this is a this is a book that I actually think it's not only, it was, you know, it's on, you know, Amazon, and I'm sure in many other great bookshops and online as juvenile fiction, but I am, you know, 50 plus and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think that it's a story that everybody should not only read, but after reading should also create a plan to, you know, go and do more singing. And what I remember also is this idea that, you know, a lot of our songs that are in, you know, coming out on the whatever, YouTube channels, pop channels, wherever, I was reminded while reading all these beautiful, you know, of for example, the yew trees and the birch trees and the oak trees and the ocean and the sun and the sunrise, and thinking of a lot of songs that have disappeared. Even, you know, I mean, I come also from jazz, so we also had Autumn in New York or the Autumn Leaves, or but there's not that much nature. If you're talking about our earth really in a moment of crisis and global warming, our songs used to have that language of respect, you know, let's, whatever it is, let's go cherry picking, or we're going to go down in the valley and pick some wildflowers or plant some wildflowers. And the repertoire, the pop repertoire that is, you know, out there with the masses does not reflect that anymore.
That's really interesting that you say that. I mean, another reflection of that is that the Oxford Book Dictionary for Children has taken out words like dandelion and willow and bluebell and acorn and replaced it with blog and technological words. So we're forgetting the words of nature, and if we don't connect with nature and know the words of nature, and as you say, sing the songs of nature, when you do, then you want to save something, you want to protect it. When you're in a field of bluebells in England, you want to make sure other people see those bluebells, or you're with a willow tree, and it's really helping you through grief, or it's giving you, an oak tree is giving you strength, and you take a little acorn and that reminder of that strength you felt from the oak. If children don't know what an acorn is and are so entranced, I'm sort of using the word our thumbs with texting. We have these marvelous opposable thumbs that set us apart from other animals, that we can do all of these wonderful things with. And what are we doing with them now? We're texting.
Yeah, we're texting.
You know, our senses, our five senses, engaging with the five senses through the natural world.
Right. And I think it is a very, it's a big difference if someone says, oh, that's a flower, or if they say that's a wild violet or a crocus or a bluebell, or, right? Or I love dandelions, so I'm very shocked now that...
Yeah, dandelions.
Dandelions are no longer part of our dictionary. That's a shocker. Exactly. Crazy. Yeah, I mean, and every... I think you know this too. Every plant, every star, it all has its own frequency too.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not only that we can sing about them, but that they are creating that harmony that surrounds us, that keeps us
absolutely
healthy and well. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And that's why I sing for trees on Earth Day, April 22nd, noon, wherever you are in the world. Sing for trees you love. Over 10,000 people in 40 countries over 10 years have been singing to trees.
Yeah, you're the inspiration behind, is it called Tree Day or Earth?
I'm not the inspiration for Earth Day, that, but I was at the first Earth Day. But I put Earth Day, Sing for the Trees, to do it on Earth Day, since that's the day that a lot of people, not so much in England, but in America, a lot of people celebrate Earth Day, and it's becoming more known around the world. And even now, there's a group I belong to called Tree Sisters, where for £10 a month, I donate every month, and I plant, I think, about 120 trees. We're planting 3 million trees with Tree Sisters. They're doing a Sing for the Trees on International Women's Day on March 8th, and I'm going to be part of that as well, and part of a call with the Tree Sisters, helping women find their voices.
Okay, I will join you on March 8th. We are going to take a small station break.
Okay.
March 8th it is, for planting more trees and singing to them.
Conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos. A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hi, everybody. This is Kara Johnstead, and I'm back with this wonderful author, voice healer, singer, Susan Elizabeth-Hale. So, Susan, you've traveled your own voice journey, and so you're not only guiding other people to open their voices, but you're also an accomplished singer. What's it like for you? Do you have any daily rituals that connect you to that beautiful instrument that you have?
My daily rituals are, I do a lot of humming. Humming's mm-hmm. very nurturing. I do a lot of vocal toning. I might not do it every day, but that practice of breathing in through your nose, out through your mouth, and allowing sighs and yawns and sounds to emerge that can really become very profound if you continue doing it for 10, 15, 20 minutes, you can find mm-hmm. all, I mean, I found all sorts of places in my voice that I never knew I had through doing that, through just allowing sound to move through the body. I have a Shruti box that I love playing, mm-hmm. and sometimes I will do mantras. It's not as much, it's more of a spiritual practice than a voice practice. But sometimes I'll just do the Shruti box and do a lot of vocal improvisation. Mm-hmm. Before doing things, I often do the opening throat exercises, which for me are breathing in with the eyes alive as if you're seeing somebody surprised. You're in an airport and you run into somebody and you go, oh, hey, Kara, wow, great to see you. But the first impulse is that breathing nice. In and feeling coolness on the back of the throat. So I do that. Puppy sounds sometimes, chakra toning I do. I do know vocalises and, you know, had some training in becoming a music therapist and doing traditional German Lieder and French art songs, and you know, there were all kinds of vocalises that I did that, you know, I might go back to depending on what I'm doing. But I don't consider myself quite a performer in that way. I've been more of a teacher. My voice has come out more through my teaching than it has through performing. I'm a poet, and I like reading my poetry, and sometimes I'll put sounds in my poems.
Oh, nice. I didn't realize that. I did. I think you also are a songwriter also, aren't you? Do you compose songs?
Yes, I do. And actually, I'm going to be launching a project. I don't have the date exactly yet, but not only is there Emma Oliver and the Song of Creation that people can buy, that, as you say, isn't just for 9 to 11-year-olds, but it's for mothers, grandmothers, grandfathers, people, you know, anybody really who's wants to go on a journey of their voice. But I've, with a friend of mine who's a really talented pianist and composer, we have 17 Emma Oliver songs.
Nice.
Telling Emma's story through song. And we're calling it Emma Oliver and Her Songs of Creation. So maybe as soon as April that will be launched, but I'm just at the beginnings of working to tie up loose ends and see what I need to do for crowdfunding, and working with a very talented young woman named Sophie Mortimer who helps people launch projects.
Nice.
So I'm and just at the beginnings of talking with Sophie about that. And
yeah, my intuition just saw a musical, Broadway musical. Here we go.
Well,
that was my intuition.
Broadway musical. I mean, my biggest dream actually is that it's a movie.
Okay, let's do that. Let's manifest
When I sang, when I told Susanna, my composer friend, the story, this was probably, maybe even 8 years ago or so, I told her the story of Emma Oliver. She cried, and then she took me to her home and played a piece for me, and I said, oh my gosh, Susanna, that is the song that's playing when the credits are rolling at the end of the movie.
Right.
And she said, it's a movie. after she cried. She said, it's a movie. And then she played that, and I went, I'm hearing words.
Fantastic.
And that was when I was in America, you know, so I sent her my words, and we had a song. But since living in the UK, only an hour from her, we get together, and it's such a joy to work with her. It's so easy to work with her. So we're working on finishing our 17 Emma Oliver songs that may go, hopefully, in a movie. So Steven Spielberg, if you're listening,
we have the next great movie for you. Yeah, well, I will. My brother's in film. He is a producer in Hollywood. So I will be sending off a book to
thank you.
He has a beautiful young daughter who's 7. So, but she's brighter than any 20-year-old, if not 50-year-old. So I think I think it's perfect for her. And I think that there, if anyone's listening out there and would love to, you know, contact Susan and see how. To create this, create a movie from this book. It's all possible, right? We can set the intent and voice it, and then see what happens. Make the
magic,
as you said.
Thank you. That's
to enchant,
my intention.
Right? To enchant the world, to chant it
to
into
enchant
reality.
The world, to enchant the land.
Yeah. So
to
you
find
also
our
talking
voice,
about
to remember ourselves as singers of life.
Exactly. And you also, when we say enchant the land, you do have a second book called Sacred Space, Sacred Sound, The Acoustic Mystery of Holy Places. So that's where you traveled around the world or to different places and explored the acoustics of sacred places or, let's say, the land. Why did they build certain cathedrals and
yes,
certain places,
exactly.
And how does voice resonate in those places? Want to share a little bit more about that?
Yes. Well, I had a vision in my heart that said, follow the Lady of Roses and follow her music. And I was really, you know, wide-eyed and felt every word of that. And then I came out of the vision and was like, what? What does that mean? And how do you do that? And who's the Lady of Roses? And I ended up finding out about the Black Madonna and Chartres Cathedral, and I felt like I needed to go to Chartres Cathedral and sing. I'd never been to Europe. I'm not Catholic, and so it was a bit daunting, but I found a time just after an evening service when hardly anybody was there, but the cathedral was still open. And I went to the center of the labyrinth in the nave, and it was covered over by chairs. I didn't try to remove the chairs, but I stood in the center of the labyrinth, and I just listened.
Mm-hmm.
And I breathed in, and I breathed in the space, and I had my intention. I said, why I'm here. I'm here to sing. I'm here to sing to the Lady of Roses. And I allowed these songs to pour through me, and I heard my voice come back to me from the far end of the cathedral to where I was standing. And it was really a very profound moment. The next day, I went on a crypt tour where there's another Black Madonna, and I asked the guide if I could sing, and he said yes. He said, actually, if you'd like to come back, would you like to be alone here for an hour? Yes, please.
Yes.
And then this couple on the tour said, oh, my gosh, it was you. We heard you last night. We thought you were a boy, soprano. We tried to find you. We couldn't find you. Would you allow us to accompany you? And I said, yes, it would be my honor. So the three of us went back to the crypt at Chartres Cathedral.
Right.
And I sang. And it was even deeper because I had a whole hour and permission. And I had witnesses. And when I was finished, the woman who was there, it was a Dutch woman, said, singing petrifies me. But I have to sing here. I have a song I'd like to sing. She was shaking tears were streaming down her eyes, and she sang. And it was, in a way, even more moving than what I had done. It was so raw and so real that she let herself do that.
Well, I think there's a line, I believe it's St. Francis, some people, you know, Francis from Assisi, some people say it's St. Augustine, but to sing is to pray twice.
Exactly. That's a quote in my book.
Ah, beautiful. I have another quote.
Twice.
Yeah, I have another quote from your book, which I thought was very beautiful. Song is a way to arrive at silence. Listening is a way to arrive at prayer. And you talk about also that, you know, not only are we, can do we have that opportunity to enter these cathedrals, but our own body is a cathedral. It's a,
absolutely,
it's, these resonating chambers are within our body.
Absolutely. We are a sacred site. We are a holy place. Our voice is sacred.
Right. Right.
Our breath is sacred.
Word so anytime, is sacred. Yeah, so anytime we wish to, wherever we are, we can create a sacred place and a sacred moment.
Absolutely. It can be the tree in our backyard, mm-hmm, or a flower we've brought into the house.
Right.
It's everywhere. Every tree is the tree of life.
Right.
Every spot of the earth is holy ground. And that's our heritage.
And funny enough, I always play with this idea of holy, to be whole, and oddly enough, our voice, we are at the core of our body, we also have holes. I mean, we are entered, right, through holes. I mean, our voice is right above the hole that goes to our heart. And it seems like when the vocal folds come together, there's a oneness that happens. And maybe there's more to the holiness and the wholeness and the holes that are our ears and our, you know, our throat, sacred sexuality. You know, the beauty of being one within
absolutely
ourselves and also within our world, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, this is getting to be
so
deep.
To find your voice is so profound. It changes everything.
Exactly. It empowers us to really live our full potential on earth.
Absolutely. So we encourage all the listeners to reflect on what is the story of your voice and to take that risk,
even
if it's in the shower or your bathtub, to just explore.
Yeah.
And all the things that were said weren't true. They weren't true. We took them in as truth, and that's not the truth of who we are.
Yeah, or interestingly enough, that we give more power to the words that might be negative than, I'm sure there are also people on the path that said, you're great, you're wonderful, you're good, but somehow we tend to gravitate towards the thorns, and we forget.
We think we're bad.
Awesome people.
Yeah.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and we're not.
Yeah, creating that sound world. I mean, a sound body, sound consciousness, sound ideas. Susan, where's the best place if people want to connect with you, if there are any screenwriters out there that would like to turn this into a book, where can they reach you?
Probably.
Do you have a
right
page?
Now, my Emma Oliver and the Song of Creation site, there's a contact form there.
Fantastic.
So they can write to me there, and I will respond immediately. To any screenwriters, producers,
exactly.
Actors,
and lovers of being on the path and really creating that world, that designing the world that we want to live in, right? I will definitely be joining you on March 8th, and I also believe April 22nd is the official Earth Day, if I have that
Earth
correct.
Day, sing for the trees at noon,
sing
wherever you
trees
are in the world. Sing for the trees you love.
Exactly. So if there's one thing that you would love everyone to take from this interview about voice, what would it be as we are coming to a close of a beautiful hour together? What is the
one? Believe that the power is within you to find your true voice. And there are many people who can help you do that.
Beautiful. Susan Elizabeth Hale, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Cara.
Yeah,
I'm very moved.
I hope this is the first of many interviews to come. I wish you much success. And,
thank you so much.
Let's do this again when the big film is out or other projects are out. Yeah.
Yeah.